Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
A safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Welcome, everyone, to another Sunday night, and this happens to be the next to last Sunday night in September of 2018, and tonight's show is an interesting show because we're going to be talking to some folks who made an effort to bridge between various diverse groups in Philadelphia, and I'd like them to introduce themselves. So, Gabrielle, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, I'm Gabrielle Corsaro. I'm co-artistic director of the Bridge PHL and artistic director of Angel Pirate Productions here in Philadelphia.
And Hannah?
Hi, I'm Hannah Zapatoris-McLeod, and I am also the co-artistic director of the Bridge PHL, and I am the founder and artistic director of Naked Feet Productions.
So an effort like the one we're going to talk about tonight, the Bridge, doesn't come from, you know, it doesn't just start. It sort of has, now that you're in it, you can sort of look back and say, oh, that's where that came from. So how did the effort that you're in, which is in its third performing festival season in November, how did that get started?
Gabby and I had been a part of something called Greenlight. And we and a few other women had started coming together to sort of rekindle that. The artistic director of Greenlight had taken it with her when she moved across the country. And so we were starting to come together and a bunch of women talking about, like, how are we going to rekindle what we had with that amazing production, you know, festival sort of thing we were doing with them. And then it sort of evolved into something else. And both Gabby and I felt that the mission had to be more focused on diversity and bringing our awareness to the current tides, you know, not just women's voices, but, you know, Black women's voices and Native American women's voices, and everybody's voices needed to be coming forward and making a stand. Gabby?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we, Alex Stokes Pandola is the artistic director of Greenlight Productions, and she moved across the country to California with her family. And Hannah and I had done a lot of work with her production company there. And so we were looking for a way for the women theater artists that we'd worked with in that group to go forward and continue. But we were very present with in those first meetings. This would have been in 2015, with you know, some of the issues that we're facing, you know, as a nation, and of course then as artists, that we were, you know, finding ourselves particularly disturbed by, and those were around, you know, ongoing oppression and racism in the country.
The lack
and
of,
we,
of
yeah.
the lack of presence too. Like we
yeah.
weren't seeing these, you know, their voices
yeah.
weren't being heard.
Yeah, we certainly weren't seeing them a great deal, you know, in mainstream theater, you know, and you know, here in Philadelphia, New York. I mean, occasionally. But we knew that there's a very vibrant Black theater community in Philadelphia, but
oh, yeah.
that community didn't really ever seem to touch. You
never
know,
highlighted.
You know, and we didn't, and we hadn't had the opportunity to work with very many women of color or theater artists of color ourselves in our projects, and we understood that to be a great loss for us and a great
mm-hmm.
opportunity. For the future, and Hannah and I particularly started to really gel. I mean, we were friends before, certainly, but we found ourselves very, very drawn to this particular mission of raising up the voices of Black women artists and artists of color, and to sort of right that wrong of not having made stronger effort in the past to include
mm-hmm.
their stories, their perspectives, their voices. We became very,
yeah,
very passionate
sort of
about
began.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you describe the scene with those voices as being vibrant, do you mean there was a scene that was totally within that community and wasn't being heard outside that community, and that's what you're sort of trying to provide?
Well, there's within Philadelphia, there are many Black theater artists who are putting on plays and performances, and Black artists are performing for Black audiences, and very few white audiences are going to see these Black plays. And I, for one, have gone, and I'm like, I want to see what's going on in the Black theater community, and it's vibrant and rich, and there's talent. And it's strong, and it's amazing, and it's a loss for the white community that we are not touching base with our Black brothers and sisters of color who are theater artists. Like, we were like, we need to bridge this divide, because there's, you know, we all are trying to work here as artists, and we need to, you know, open up that
right.
that door. Like, let's connect, yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like working in a farm field and not knowing about the 10 acres over there and not knowing
yeah.
what's being grown there, and all of a sudden you trip and fall and you fall over the boundary, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this existed. Hey,
right,
everybody.
Right, because we live in our little bubble.
right.
Exactly.
You know,
so that
yeah.
that in a in a nutshell, that is what the bridge is all about.
Yeah, our mission is that we strive to foster healing connections between our rich and diverse communities by encouraging openness and dialogue around perspectives on racial prejudice, privilege, inclusion, intersectionality, and bias. And
mm-hmm.
every single word of those of that we've
crafted
really
that.
Labored.
We spent a long time.
We crafted that because we wanted to be very precise about,
mm-hmm.
you know, what we're doing. You know, there's a lot of integrity in having a precise mission, and it also makes it much clearer to us as to what we're about and what we're doing.
Yeah.
So we just go back with every decision. We look at the mission and go, are we on mission? Yes, okay, we're
this
on mission.
Just fall
know?
Under, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But because it's interesting, you know, I think that we're in an era now where there's a lot of, you know, Hannah and I have been doing a lot of reading and learning about this as well, you know, and there's this awareness now of what it means, you know, to be a white person who, you know, wants to end racism and wants and is aware of, you know, of that the country was founded in a white supremacist form and what that means, and patriarchy and what that means and how those things continue to resonate and impact very, very negatively, I would argue, everyone, because it hurts everyone, but it certainly is still harming the Black community. And it's not enough to simply, you know, say something like, I don't see color, or to raise your children to be open-minded. And, you know, it's not enough. It's not enough to just sit quietly with yourself and say, I'm a good person, the people around me are good people, because that's not actually having an impact.
We have to become uncomfortable, and we have to allow ourselves to be uncomfortable with these truths in order for us to grow as human beings. And, you know, I know that Gabby and I have both been on an incredible journey, and I've learned so many things and continue to learn every day. And, you know, a few years ago when I was directing one of the pieces for the first ever Bridge PHL, and we were in rehearsal, and we had three Black actors and three white actors, and we were in this particular scene where they were sort of improvising and creating this moment, and this uncomfortable moment happened that between the white character and the Black character that they were going with, because they were such brilliant actors. And I, as a white woman, was like, wow, that made me so uncomfortable. I think we got to keep it. You know, like we have to be uncomfortable, and we have to be okay with that in order to grow.
Yeah. And we knew also that, I mean, you know, this work, you know, we thought it has to be led by us as white women, because we feel this is white people's work to make these efforts, you know, to make these efforts, to make this change, to use our, I mean, I know we're using a lot of words that probably many people have a lot of feeling about, like, you know, I'm going to say that we should use our white privilege. And we can certainly talk about what that is and what that is not, you know, but to use that to try and, you know, create change and to do good with it. So we knew that we couldn't be having a lot of very serious conversations about the direction that the Bridge PHL was going to go in without there being a Black woman in the room to make sure that we, you know, to course correct us when we were going off on our idea of what we think would be a great idea, but really wouldn't be that helpful. And so we have, fortunately, we have now with us, we have many beautiful artists of color and Black women that work with us and Black men, but we have Carla Ezell, who is now our production director, who came on as a producer last year, and before that worked as an artist with us. Now she's like, you know, our third person who, you know, and she is Black, and she has been an invaluable addition to our
awesome
direction, because we absolutely will have conversations that will go in a, she will absolutely illuminate something for us on a regular basis that
every day
absolutely. So, and it's we cherish it. This has really been, they always say that the Bridge PHL, you know, will teach us many lessons and provide many gifts, because it really, it does. It's unbelievable once you start this work and start these conversations. I mean, they're difficult, they're painful. You make mistakes, you say things you regret that you didn't understand, you didn't mean to do any harm. You know, these things happen, but you come out of it.
Then we grow.
So
we
much
grow.
More.
And that's,
Right. Yeah.
And I think, I know that Gabby and I both feel like this is an ongoing journey and an ongoing process of discovery and enlightenment and joy, too, because the love that we have come across and the community of artists who we've been working with the past 3 years, like, it's just unbelievable. The people that are coming out and who are, like, grabbing our hands and saying, I want to be a part of this, this, you know, thing that is happening. It's happening.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's so gratifying, and we had no idea that it would be so, you know, so joyous and growing and rich so quickly. But we're extremely grateful for it and very inspired.
Yeah, your mission really is it resonates with the mission of an emerging forest, because I grew up I grew up with in sort of the envelope of white culture. And in the past, since 2005, I've sort of re-educated myself and continue to drop barriers about not the fertility of this culture, but actually the infertility of this culture. And how we need, and literally, you look at the dying ecosystem, you look at the dying species, you look literally at the television shows that are so infantile, you look at the percent, you look at the percentage of chronic disease. One of my previous guests was talking about she's seriously worried about fertility of the next generation and actually having a next generation because of the increase in vaccination coupled with the steadily decreasing food value of what everyone's eating,
right.
Like 50% of the next generation is going to be chronically ill. So there is literally, there is an active campaign of supervisors who control the direction of our society.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the area that you're talking about. I'm super interested in the area that you're talking about, but it's a much larger scope of a thing. So I
Absolutely.
Just look at it and I say, okay, this society that we are in is one group's vision of what they want. And I say to them, an emerging forest and the bridge and many, many other efforts are, hey, we don't want to go in your direction. We don't want a field with all these people in it that's so cordoned off with obstacles that we don't know anybody anymore, and we're encouraged just to, you know, continue to be even more insular to the point where we just all stay at home or something
right.
like that.
Right. I mean, certainly, I mean, you know, with social media and the internet, there's a great opportunity with that. There's all of these ways now to reach out to one another through these things and to stay in touch with people and to make new connections, and that's wonderful. Except for the fact that if you're not looking to branch out, you can become extremely, extremely insular in what you read about and what you think about
your
and what people are
enclave.
Saying to you and what you're, you know, I mean, you can unfriend someone. We have been unfriended. If you're saying something that someone doesn't want to hear, and you know, and I agree with you completely. You know, we are all connected, and lots of issues, you know, are connected to one another. Social
mm-hmm.
justice absolutely, you know, impacts, you know, access to healthy food. You know, which goes
mm-hmm.
back then to neighborhoods that, you know, are nutrient deserts. And that
we
goes back to,
deserts.
You know, like everything is just like, there's just, it's all connected. And, you know, while we very much wish to stay extremely precise on what we're focusing on, because we also, you know, feel that you bring up racism against Black people, and everybody who isn't Black in the room wants to change subject. They would love
right.
to talk about anything else at all. They'd rather talk about racism towards another group or some other kind of injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are absolutely valid and absolutely true and happening and horrible. But we are two white women that are trying to keep the focus on racism towards Black people just
yeah.
for 4 days a year at the Rosenberg,
right.
you know, and
right.
And you know, because
well,
if we could just stay focused on that, the stories that those artists are telling are very varied. And if you're there to experience them, you understand how their experience is affecting everything that the rest of us who may not be Black are also experiencing. And so
mm-hmm.
that's helpful to know, you know.
Well, and once we start to have that conversation and we start to make a dent in that, not that it's going to take time because this is like hundreds of years going on, right? So we're just two little people in Philadelphia holding up our little light. But once we start to make even the slightest dent in that, other things are going to give, you know, like it's like, you know, it's got to be an arrow. It's got to be pointed. It's got to be focused on this thing because the rest of the things will start to shatter and give way to justice overall.
Yeah. It's a matter of getting people used to hearing this conversation and being willing to stay in this conversation and not
even
to be afraid and not feel attacked.
Not
and
easy.
Just to, and it's you know, it is
not
easy. It's really painful a lot of times. And it's, you know, just, I mean, I know when I first started, you know, doing some of this work, doing
we
research.
Almost didn't do it.
It was,
remember?
I mean, we had a hard time getting even like one meeting with a group of people because you know, people don't want to have to think about this. White people certainly, you know, don't want to have to take responsibility for any of this. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about what we're asking of people or why we want to have these conversations. And, you know, but mainly we want to have them because we know that these people that we know are part of communities that are part of a history that continue to be brutalized. And so something must still need to be done. And we can't just, you know, sit here and say, oh my God, what a shame. That's so horrible.
No, we have to step up. We've got to step up.
Yeah.
That's what we've been feeling like is our job here. You know,
yeah.
And even our little voices in Philadelphia are going to make change because it's growing. It's growing.
It changes us, you know, it changes us and we can branch out, you know, as time progresses. But, you know, but this is, you know, I think that one of the lessons that we're learning too is how to remain open, you know, when we're, you know, faced with some criticism, you know, which I have to say, we've been very fortunate. We haven't actually fielded a whole lot of criticism. We've fielded way, way, way more good energy and, you know, and
support,
you know, right.
Love.
But when we do get some, it's usually from a white person who has an idea that we should be doing this in a different way than we're doing it. It could be any number of things, any number of small parts of this project that something about it is not the way they would do it. And to which, you know, we're always like,
we're like,
go
and
it.
Have a project. Why don't you start a project then?
You know, we're not competing with you. We are not going for like, you know, we're not going to try to win the, you know, gold medal for best white, you know, artist. You know,
we all need to take a stand.
We were like, please go show us the good way to do it then, you know? I mean, seriously, like, let there be more of this then, you
please.
Know? And I think that there's a lot of that. There's a lot of just, like, saying to everyone, whatever it is that you feel really passionate about, if there's some wrong or injustice, like, just you know, just make a small step to do something, to make, you know, like this podcast, you know, like I call it a podcast, you know, this show that we're on right here, you know, like do something, put something out in the world, create something that is a gesture and a step and a walk and a conversation towards the change you want to make, you know.
Be the change.
Be the change.
Yep. Be the change.
You see, we don't have a whole lot to say about any of this, Alan.
So my 3-minute commercial is I run a produce club in southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey that actually accesses the wholesale produce markets in Philadelphia. And there is a lot of hidden, really, really low-cost food. That is sort of the process is the wholesaler receives it. They sell it for a price that might be 50% to a third of the cost that you see in Whole Foods. The reason they do that is they're selling it by the case. Okay. So you need to gather a whole bunch of people together to buy those cases. But produce has this funny thing. It has a shelf life, and they're also getting some more in next week. So when they're getting more in next week of the same stuff and it becomes a storage issue, and there's a little bit left of that particular lot, they drop the price all the way to the floor. So the example I use all the time is organic sweet potatoes cost $3 a pound at Whole Foods. So if you buy the standard 40-pound case, that's $120. Well, I can buy the same quality level of organic sweet potatoes, the number ones, at this wholesaler for $36 for 40 pounds. Already you're talking about almost a factor of four. Now, their rock bottom price, the price that I go to the 2 a.m. or the 4 a.m. market and get them off the dock when they're basically ready to part with them, is that case of organic sweet potatoes, 40 pounds, can go for five bucks. I know, because I bought two last week, and I've been buying the same thing for the last 8 years. So that's what I do. That's one of the things that I do. That's one of, my show here called An Emerging Forest is just one of the things that I do along the same line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are all just important ways to take part in your community in a positive fashion. And, Hanna and I, we saw all this disgustingness. When we started, like you say, it was like 2015. So Obama was still president.
Was it 14?
You always say that. We might have started to have conversations in 2014. We may
always
very
feel
well.
Like it was so much earlier than that.
I know. Well,
and then we tried
like
to set up the festival,
show,
and it all fell apart.
It didn't,
and then we tried again.
Yeah. It took a long time
to
get started. Yeah. But we
to get the push.
Yeah, to get the push, and then the first show was really we had some black women.
I had to write a
40-minute
piece.
And Hannah wrote a piece, and I wrote a piece, and we just kind of we literally slapped it together, with like a prayer and just a little, sweat.
And a glue gun.
And we just really, but it was great. I mean, we were thrilled with it, and we got a wonderful response, and we met so many wonderful people and artists, and, that was like, we didn't have a website. I don't even know if we had a Facebook page.
Oh, my God,
we had a Facebook page. Okay,
we even had a Twitter, but none of us know how to make it happen all the time because
we're not really that savvy.
Yeah.
Carla is
she's our lady with when it comes to the internet social media. She's so savvy. She does all our graphics.
And she's also just wicked smart. She has her own business. Cahiz is her business, and she silk head wraps and knitted caps and beauty products. And so she's had a lot of experience in like how to run your own small business. And she has, definitely started to slap us into shape about how, first of all, when I talk about some of the things that we've learned, she's like, look, if you're trying to show, black women and women of color, particularly, that you're paying attention to them, and you want to draw them and their stories and their experiences to you, to this festival. I mean, we're also, of course, very interested in white artists that have something to say about this and want to express, mm-hmm. from their perspective, something about this whole issue. Then they're welcome, mm-hmm. of course, and are involved very much in our festival.
Oh, we've got quite a few white artists who have written plays and four black artists, and we're trying to keep that bridge alive.
Yeah. Yeah, but we have to do it in a thoughtful manner, and Carla has been extremely instrumental in us being aware of exactly how something is going to resonate best in black community, and then how that's helpful towards us drawing white artists who know what to look for when they're looking for a safe, brave place to have a discussion like this, because it's very nerve-wracking to create a piece of work that is, you know, political or has social commentary, and particularly if it deals with race. So we just mm-hmm. want to do everything we can to make everyone feel, you know, welcome, and you know, that we are going to, you know, I want to say we're going to take, you know, we're going to support you. We're going to try and take good care of you. You also have to take care of yourself, but we're definitely, you know, here to do whatever we can to make your vision come to life. Once we see that your work is meshing with our mission, and mm-hmm. you know, we're grateful to have you.
And on that note, I'm going to play some music now. Hey everybody, here's Dave the Bard, Howl and Toe.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born? Your father wore it, and your father wore it too.
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to An Emerging Forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Welcome back, everyone. This is a live broadcast program, and if you want to speak to our guests, Gabrielle and Hannah, please call in. The number is 646-564-9714. That's 646-564-9714. And so you guys are back on, and can you tell us something about the artists and the plays that you have slated for this year's festival?
Sure. We have a record number this year. There are 16 separate pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Not all are plays, not all are theater. Some are music, some are dance, some are poetry. Most of them are plays. There's one artist that we've worked with several times now, T.S. Hawkins, and she is an amazing local poet and playwright. She writes choreo
spoken
poems.
Word.
And
mm-hmm.
And they're gorgeous. We frequently we have been very, very, very blessed to have her work with us now several times. And
we have a lot of new playwrights.
We do. But T.S.'s piece is called "Don't Want to Dance with Ghosts," and it deals with love and pain that you are left with after, you know, a former relationship and how to go forward. And she's a Black queer artist, and so her perspective on it is very, very beautiful, very unique. Her work is always very beautiful and unique, and so we're always excited to have T.S. Hawkins working with us. Hannah, who do you want to talk about? There's so many fabulous.
Yeah, I'm going to be directing a piece written by Marie Turco called The Sanity Trials, about being bipolar and issues that go on community and stigmatisms around that. And there's a piece, there's a bunch of new artists who just dropped in and were like, we want to put our play in your festival. We vetted them. We have an artist named Autumn who has written a wonderful poem piece. Lois Moses will be assistant directing, and that Lois Moses is a really well-known Black theater artist in Philadelphia, and she's super talented and is helping with that piece.
That's Autumn Konacopa. I'm sure I just butchered your name, Autumn. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so sorry, Autumn. Anyway, 16 different artists. We have four days, but we have six performances, and through those six performances, we will be breaking up the plays so that we have every play gets about four slots in the sixth mm-hmm. slot. Festival. So you're able to get those tickets online at thebridgephl.org. And you can either get one night tickets for $15 or you can get a package and spend $40 and come as many times as you want. Yeah. And you might see the same show twice, but you might see it in a different way
You might see the same individual performances more than once if you come more than one day or evening, but you won't ever see exactly the same pieces that you saw on another time
no.
when you came.
Yeah.
So
trying to shake it up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is actually the first
so
time
many,
we've ever
right.
had this problem too, right? We've had so many.
Yeah.
We're like, how are we going to get all of these pieces in to six shows? So we made it work.
Yeah. 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 No, it's a really good problem to have.
It totally is.
So the dates are November the 1st through the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Your performance theater is the Rotunda at 4014.
In West Philadelphia.
I believe that's Walnut Street, right?
Yep, 4014
mm-hmm.
Walnut, yep. We have
performances
every one of those evenings, Thursday through Sunday at 7:30, and then we have matinees on Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. And we just ask everyone to go to thebridgepxl.org if they want to check out more of what we're about, you know, our bios and our presence. We've got a lot of good stuff on there. We've got blogging that we're doing, and we've got, all kinds of, we have a library page on our website where we link to lots of important books if you want to, if you're sort of jumping off into this world of what can I do to, you know, interrupt racism in our country, that we've got, I think a dozen at least books on there now, which members of our community here have read and recommend. And so and we have those on there. We invite everyone to come in and check us out at the Bridge page.
Or on Instagram. We have an Instagram.
Yeah, we've got a live on Instagram. Thanks to Carla.
Thanks to Carla.
Yep.
We have, of course, our Facebook page that we try to keep updated and alive as well.
So there are links to all these, to Instagram and Facebook, on your website?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep, everything. If you just go to thebridgephl.org, you can find your way. We're the Bridge PHL pretty much everywhere. So if you put that in for, at Instagram or Facebook, Twitter, we're trying to up our Twitter game. You can find us out there, talking about us, talking about our artists, talking about other things, that are going on in the community that that are relevant, to what we want to bring, shine some light on.
Mm-hmm. So you had talked earlier in the show about how the first year was baling wire and glue and a few sticks and stuff to pull it all together. And then at this end, you're basically saying, we have so much going on here. It's we're having to do this awesome jumbling or random scramble of performances, and so you never get the same bill of fare twice if you come to separate performances. But in a historical three is not a large sample to look back on. How has just in that short time period, can you talk to how the festival has changed over the last 3 years?
Well, when we first began, and it really was kind of like me and Gabby, a couple of other women who eventually sort of found other things they felt more strongly about and stepped away from the project. And we had Merlin Brown, who was really like the mom and mother and heart of our work. It was like those were the early years, right? we were just like.
And Kathy Harmer is an actor. She still works with us. And she's, but it was basically just those four of us.
And
Merle and Kathy, just kind of wearing all the hats.
We were doing everything. And it was hard because of the conversation. This is clearly a very difficult thing to say. Even, no matter who we reached out to, they were like, no, we don't really want to be involved. But once we just finally grounded ourselves in our integrity, in our truth, we got that first festival up and running. We reached out with all our hearts and wanted that connection. And what happened was, in reaching out and saying, hey, we want to have this conversation. We are not afraid. The response from the Black community, Black artists, was like tenfold. They were like, you want to talk about it? We want to talk about it too. And here we are. And then, boom, it was like,
I'm sure they don't want to have to talk about it.
No, they don't want to talk about it.
But
they were like,
they were grateful that we wanted to hear their story. We wanted to hear their perspective. We wanted to put their story, on stage. And give it space
and light and
love. And we weren't
afraid, and we're willing to make mistakes, and we're willing to grow. And, we see the value in beautiful artwork, and we want to make change. And
yeah.
I think just that alone in our dedication and our, like, this is it, no matter how hard it is, and no matter, even if we fail at it, we believe in it so strongly. And that is what bounced back to us, was that love and that support. And here we are, you know, 16 plays in, like, so many plays.
Yeah. It is. It's, I mean, when we put out our call for submission last spring, and, you know, and we ask everyone, you know, to email their submissions to us at thebridgephl@gmail.com. And at some point, you know, like not long after that, within a few weeks, I called Hannah and I was like, Hannah, we have to get together and start reading things because we've got a lot. We've got
a lot
of submissions, and, you know, we've got a lot of really good submissions. And, and, you know, it's like that saying, the moment of conviction, the universe conspires to assist you. And I think that that's, you know, Hannah and I talk about this all the time, but this is because we want to do this, and we will do this. We will do this.
Right.
And we really don't care. You know, we don't care if it's hard. We don't care if we mess up. We don't want to mess up. Please don't let us mess up. But
we
if,
don't
if
want to
something
mess up,
happens,
but, you know,
we
might
go
mess
back
up because
we'll
we're human and we might.
And we will learn. And but we're not going to stop. Partly, you know, I think, I mean, I'm driven because I mean, for so many reasons, but, you know, I'm very present that, you know, we grew up in an era where, you know, there was like feminism. And our mothers were, you know, feminists, or even grandmothers, you know, had been feminists, and, you know, and independent. And but from what I learned, you know, white feminism left Black women behind and women of color behind. And I just,
and we can't ever do that again.
And we can't ever do that again. We can't ever. We have to make up for that. You know, I can't put myself in the shoes of women who came before us. You know, but I know that, you know, in my time, in our era, I'm not going to look away, and I'm not going to leave her behind. That's completely, once you're aware of something, if you don't do anything about it, and we're very, very present with that feeling of, we have amends to make, we have space to make, we have light and love to give, and we're going to do it.
Yep. We're dedicated. We're doing it.
Yep.
We're doing it.
It's very funny. From my perspective, the produce business that I run is sometimes very difficult, and it's sometimes very challenging. And to date, I don't make a lot of money at it. So I support myself with other jobs. But then it's basically like midnight or a little bit after midnight, and you're still awake and you're worried about the project, and you're saying, you know, is the universe telling me to go in a different direction? And then you realize all during your life, the universe has always given you the out of being able to make an excuse and move on. And then you basically say, okay, I don't care what the bank account says. I don't care about any of this other stuff. I'll make this work, but this is my project.
And your passion.
All of a sudden, the universe takes a step back and says, this person is absolutely committed to this, and there's no little voice that I can stick in their head that's going to get them to stop doing this. And what happens at that point is the universe no longer can put things in your head to get you to stop, and so the universe just starts opening doors for you. And
that's true.
It's literally, as you said, it's the commitment level. It's not even a level. You're either committed or you're not. And early on, you're literally not committed. And then you get to a certain point where you say, I'm not listening to those voices anymore. I'm not listening to anybody's voice anymore except my purpose. And my purpose is to go through this wall right here, and all of a sudden there's a door.
Yeah. You know, that's really interesting. You say it that way about, you know, like your purpose and is the universe is the universe giving me an out? You know, when we were super early in this process and we had to postpone the first original festival because we just didn't have anybody who was interested.
We didn't have enough together. Yeah.
Yeah. It just wasn't working. I remember feeling this like caving sense, like, I don't think I can do this. This is too hard. And I was at Kripalu Yoga Center and this is a crazy story. And this is like the universe spoke to me. And I was there on a retreat, and there was a young Black woman who happened to also be there. And we had sort of made eye contact in the hallway a couple times. And towards the end of my stay, we were downstairs in, there's like a hot tub area in the Kripalu Yoga Center. And she was there. And we were all, like, you know, a bunch of women, and we're all in the hot tub, and we're all vulnerable. We're all nude in this hot tub. And this Black woman got up, and she went to go get into the cold tub. And mind you, I was in the state of, like, I think I just have to stop doing the bridge. It's too hard. And this Black woman got out of the hot tub naked and got into the cold tub. And I said to her, like, spontaneously, I was like, oh, my God, are you getting in the cold tub? Because to me, this is, like, a terrifying idea. And she said, yes, it's very grounding. And I was like, wow. And I got out, and there we are, nude strangers. And she's like, are you getting in? And I was like, I don't know. And she reaches her hands out to me, and she says, take my hands. And in that moment, I knew, like, I had a choice. Like, I could just be like, oh, no, I'm not comfortable with that. But I knew that this was, like, the moment the universe was giving me this metaphor, this larger-than-life metaphor, to get into the cold tub with this Black stranger and say yes. And so we got
I'm
in.
I'm going to go do this uncomfortable,
I'm going to do it no
thing.
Matter how scary and cold it's going to be.
You're showing me the way. Yeah.
Yes, I got in. I got cold and wet. We screamed. It was so cold. We up to our ears. And then we got out, and I was like, wow, thank you for making me do that. And she looked at me. She's like, I wouldn't have done that without you. And there was this moment with this stranger. We were vulnerable, and I knew in that moment I was like, this is what the universe is telling me to do. I gotta commit. And it was then like things actually started to turn around too, you know, and it was like, I know for me anyway, like my change of heart, my commitment got stronger because the universe had given me this sign. And for this woman, it might not have been a sign. It might've been like, she does this all the time. I mean, I don't know. But to me, it was a sign. It was just a deep and meaningful thing. And I don't know her name. And she just was an angel in that moment. And she was like, you know, she was spirit, and she said, this is what you need to do. And it was profound. It changed my life. It did.
I think it's
so
important.
It's
important to be open.
I was at Kripalu for 8 days in March of 2005, and there was a lot of interesting things that happened to me there. So I know very well I wasn't in the women's sauna. Sorry, I was in the men's sauna, but I understand that. But sort of some of my later adventures in the mind gave me the outcome that we're here to explore everything, and mastery is exploring all the squares and mastering all the skills that are on all the squares. And fear basically says some of those squares and some of those skills are not safe. But literally the design of the universe is for you to think that there's some lack of safety, but for you to know that all of the things that you could possibly do and all of the situations that you could possibly be in are physically present because they are to be explored and they are to be understood as they exist, they're there to be explored, they are safe by definition. So
the fear.
Yeah,
the fear is the thing that poisons our ability, our capacity to understand and grow.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It is.
Yeah. And, yeah, and getting, you know, getting through the fear that, you know, that you're going to, it's so interesting because with, you know, race discussions, it's hard to pinpoint exactly sometimes what the fear is, you know, like, you're afraid you might say the wrong thing or you're afraid, but it's very hard to pinpoint this for the whole idea of like white fragility comes in is that like when people, even if it's just a room full of white people, if they're asked to talk about race, the defenses come up and their credentials come out. As Robin DiAngelo, who wrote this recently published book, White Fragility, you know, the fears come up and we list our credentials. Like, oh, well, you know, I grew up in a very diverse neighborhood. I have lots of black friends. You know, and it's just like, okay.
And
you know?
So what?
But what are you, why do you feel the need to put up this defense? And I would say this to myself and to anyone else. It's like, why can't we just talk about it without us having to like explain why we get
feel defensive about it?
We don't have to do anything. We're one of the good ones. We're, you know, and it's like, but that's not,
yeah, we
you know,
didn't say that.
But you know, that's not helping the black community and the unbelievable situation that they are still in this country. That there's nothing that protects them, and there's and it's shocking that we would take the opportunity to find a way to bow out because the whole thing is so intolerable. It's not necessary. We can have these conversations and all live through them, you know. And if we do them the right way, nobody
with
has to
compassion.
Feel. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why we all feel the way we feel, however it is we feel. You know, there's a reason for it. But if progress is to be made, there has to be a willingness to have some open discussion and, you know, and
to take the plunge,
you know,
into the cold tub.
Yeah. You know, I know that there are times when people are going
to
come to the show and be uncomfortable,
Yeah, it's interesting to be in a relationship, and it is a relationship. And so to simplify it, let's just call it a white-black relationship. So it's not just how the black community is held. It's a relationship. So it's how the so if you take a step back, let's take a big step back and look at it, like hold your hands out and say, we have on one hand, we have the black community. On the other hand, we have the white community. Well, the black community has been articulated to be in a certain posture, but when it comes together and they have this relationship, please look at the white community and how does the white community posture itself?
Mm-hmm.
And we have the opportunity here to learn how we are posturing ourselves.
Yes.
Okay, so, mm-hmm. so historically, these two populations based on color have been manipulated by events. It's not just the black community that's been manipulated by events. It's the white community as well. So by
dealing with
this uncomfortable situation, you're actually dealing with your own uncomfortable situation.
It's very true. Yeah.
Understanding how these two hands grasp each other.
Yeah.
It's not symmetrical. That means that on the one hand, the black community has a particular, but then you realize that in order to grasp hands and have this relationship, the white community is doing all of these things and we don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, I think, you know, not to go too far down this road, but, you know, our current political situation is very indicative of what can happen if you're willing to let yourself be lied to and to lie to yourself and not face the reality of the things that are not working in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And
many thousands of years of that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
what are some initiatives or events that the Bridge PHL is looking to add to its programming in the future?
Oh, we're definitely going to start a talkback series. We talked about this,
yes.
Remember, Gabby, at my birthday party in August. We have a couple
absolutely.
Of people.
Yes.
We started this conversation, a panel where, you know, a panel of professionals, and you know, will be there to speak about their experiences and, you know, be available for conversation and discussion. We also want to do some workshops. We have a cabaret that we are going to be producing.
Cabaret in the spring. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have, I mean, the Bridge, the festival isn't just our only little event. We definitely have more. And as we grow, we plan on having more and more, you know, outreach. Like, the Bridge could reach out all over the world.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Workshops everywhere.
I mean, I think we have done a lot of, like, big, lofty dreams that, you know, like, our 9-to-5 jobs are not, job is way more than 9-to-5. But, like, our regular grown-up people jobs get in the way of us being able to really make some of those things happen quickly. But we have a lot of big ideas for ways that the Bridge PHL and its artists, its growing community of artists, can work together to maybe do all sorts of wonderful things. But, you know, it starts with, I think, just some good conversation.
The cabaret.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It starts with some good conversation and some mixing some audiences up a little bit. I mean, it's Philadelphia already. We've got plenty of everybody. So there's no excuse for why we can't come together and have some good conversation and have some good entertainment.
Yeah.
So one
Definitely.
Thing that I was thinking about as we were stepping through this is, are you filming these performances?
We do. We have
we have
footage of everything. We have a YouTube page. There's and also a lot of our videos are on our website. We have in our photo gallery. There's also a video gallery. Yeah.
That's something. Documentation is so important, and especially when it's a live performance, documentation is basically because so quote unquote so few people will actually have been there that connection and having those videos always working for you is like. I look at it as being unless you're like screaming at the top of the lungs, hey, we just had these 4 days of performances on November the 5th.
Right.
It didn't happen.
And,
so
absolutely.
Live performance
is ephemeral. But we have video video coverage of. All of our of both festivals that have happened, and we've had two fundraisers, and that were sort of more sort of cabaret.
I don't think we got video footage. Did we get video footage of the first fundraiser? I don't remember.
I believe so.
Oh, we did. No, we did.
Yes. Yeah.
Or most of it.
Yeah, most of it. Yeah, a lot of the highlights certainly. It's all on our YouTube channel, and a lot of it is on our website.
Yeah.
But you're right,
well,
I couldn't agree more. We absolutely have to record it.
So basically what I want to do is I want to go into a summary mode where you basically say, we're having a festival. So you guys are having a festival on the 1st through the 4th of November. You're going to hold it at the Rotunda, which is a University of Pennsylvania building at 4014 Walnut Street in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me a little bit, sort of a thumbnail of what the Bridge PHL is about and what an audience can expect when they arrive and see this performance.
Well, there'll be 16 plays over the course of these 4 days and 6 performances, diverse voices from all over the community, a myriad of different topics that these diverse voices have to talk about.
And the plays are all about, and performances are all between 5 and 15 minutes long. So you're getting short, but powerful bits of theater or song or dance. And they all, you know, somehow jive with our mission of trying to, you know,
create healing connection.
Yeah. There's comedy, it's a lot of different things, but there's definitely there's a thread that goes through the whole thing. And one thing that I'd also like to say is that I certainly hope, I believe this is true, and this is what we've been told, and so I feel okay to say it, but we have been told that it is a warm and welcoming environment. That is certainly our intention, to make it feel that way. You know, there's some tough stuff happening on stage. But the environment, it's not like, you know, it's not a horrible experience of pain and suffering. It's, you know, but there are some, you know, it's definitely serious, hard topics that we're dealing with. But the feeling at the end is inspired and hopeful and the feeling
oriented.
Of connection. You know,
mm-hmm.
that we just went through something together and came out together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that it's safe and it's warm and it's welcoming.
And even when it's uncomfortable, it's okay.
It's okay because you're going to be seeing a beautiful piece of art and performance with wonderful people who are putting themselves out there because it means that much to them. And, you know, I don't think we're designed as humans to like not open ourselves to that.
And it's $15 for one night, and it's $40 for a festival pass. You can get that on our website, thebridgephl.org.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. This has been another incredible episode of An Emerging Forest. And my name is Alan Ritter, and my email address is ritter.alan88@gmail.com. So ritter.alan88@gmail.com. I run a small produce business in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area, and you can ask me questions about that as well. And my summary is always the same, and it's always something that is touched by the show. We are here to explore our edges. Our 9-to-5 job might be something just normal, but when you find your edge, when you find your purpose, you will know, and you will be challenged many times to walk away from it. But even walking away from it is not a mistake. Because I changed my vocabulary. I don't see mistakes anymore. I see training. So I've changed my entire vocabulary away from any possibility of ever having a negative experience again. And I don't make mistakes. I'm in training. I don't run a marathon tomorrow. I train to run a marathon. So I can walk away from my purpose a million times. I can walk away from my purpose over 14 or 15 or 25 lifetimes. And then I can finally stick to it. And that was all training. So it's all positive. Thank you so much.
That's awesome.
That's terrific.
So thank you so much, Gabrielle and Hannah, for being on tonight.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Alan. Let's stay
in touch. I'm certainly available.
Come to the bridge.
I'm certainly available to host your artists if you wish me to, or any other opportunities to provide support. So have a great evening.
Wonderful.
And everyone out there, have a great evening as well.
Thanks, Alan. Have a great night. Thank you, Alan.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.